Nigel, thank you very much for that kind introduction. It's great to be here with you at the Custom Harvesters at Ag Connect, and especially here courtesy of New Holland. We were very pleased at Growth Energy. As Nigel said, we're representing almost 80 ethanol plants and tens of thousands of farm families and trying to help this country move forward. And New Holland stepped up and formed a partnership with us, and because we think that the ethanol business is a lot bigger and a lot more significant for America than just the plants themselves. And that's kind of what I want to talk about today. But I want to thank you, Nigel, and all of you at New Holland for your support of Growth Energy and for what we're trying to do for America. As Nigel said, I'm an Army guy. I grew up in Arkansas. I went to West Point when I was 17 years old. I wasn't lucky enough to grow up on a farm. My mother was a secretary in a bank, and maybe if I'd had a good farm opportunity, I wouldn't have gone into the Army like that. But there wasn't anything in Arkansas to keep me. I stayed in the Army for 34 years. I went to Vietnam. I was an infantry company commander in Vietnam. I took four rounds in a fight in a base camp. I got medevaced. I came home on a stretcher. And I love this country. And I stayed in uniform for another 30 years because I love this country. My last assignment, I was the NATO commander. And I led NATO in its first military action, in significant military action in Europe. We had a 78-day air campaign with plans for a ground invasion into a part of former Yugoslavia to stop ethnic cleansing. We saved 1.5 million Albanians. We didn't get any American troops on the ground involved in any action. We did it entirely through the air. In fact, we didn't lose a single American in combat in this, but we did help create a new nation, saving 1.5 million Albanians at the time. So, and then I retired from the military, but I'm very proud of my military service, and I want to thank all of our veterans here who served. If you're a veteran and you served our country in uniform, would you just raise your hand so we can recognize you? Thank you. And I know there's a lot of you who's, maybe you didn't serve, but you've got relatives who served, and maybe your sons and daughters have been involved over in Iraq and Afghanistan in recent years. Because we've asked a lot of the people of America in the name of national security. Now, I want to talk about national security from a different sense, and that is the sense of our energy posture. When I was a captain in the Army, it was 1973, and suddenly we were caught up in the first oil embargo. You could see the price of oil going up all that spring. I was teaching economics at West Point, and I had learned as a student studying economics at the university level that monopolies were a bad thing. In fact, the United States government almost always acted to break up monopolies. We've been doing it for years. Suddenly there was an oil monopoly that came up, and it was international, and we did nothing. And the price of gasoline went from, well, I was one of those 27.8 cent a gallon shoppers in those days, and it went to 32, and before you knew it, it was a dollar, and you couldn't get it. And people were asking, what does the future hold? I went down to the Pentagon. They let me do some studies there in the classified part of the Pentagon during the summer of 1973. And I wrote some of the first papers that had been done on the impact of the energy crisis. And it was clear from 1973 that if the United States didn't change from being an oil importing country, if we continued to rely on oil coming from the Middle East, that at some point in time, we might actually have to send troops to the Middle East to secure our access to oil. Now you say, yeah, big deal. Well, let me tell you something. In 1973, no one wanted to face it. We went through the Nixon administration, the Ford administration, the Carter administration, the Reagan administration, Bush 1, the Clinton administration, and Bush 2, and now we're in the Obama administration. And last year, we spent $300 billion importing oil from outside America. Liquid fuel that we could have produced ourselves in this country, and we didn't. $300 billion. I know it doesn't sound like much money. I mean, if you're reading the newspapers, there's already talking about $1 trillion here and $1 trillion there. $300 billion. It's 2% of the American gross domestic product. If you could keep that money in America, you could provide 8 million jobs. You could pay for every young person who wants to go to college. You could get them in college. You could fix America's infrastructure, repair roads and bridges. You could afford to buy a new air traffic control system for America so that when it snows in Kansas City, it doesn't stop airline travel all over the United States. You could do wondrous things with that $300 billion. Instead, every year we're sending it to Saudi Arabia, to Mexico, to Venezuela, to the United Arab Emirates, to Angola, to Nigeria. Some of it even gets to Libya. And you look at this and you say, why is this? Why can't we fix this problem? The truth is, we can fix the problem. We just haven't had the will to do so. So we were looking at this problem in the context of the strikes on the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, in the early years of the 21st century. And men and women in Congress, with a little prompting from the Iowa congressional delegation, created something called the Renewable Fuels Standard. They passed a law. They said biofuels are going to be important to the nation's future. What started as, in the 1900s, some farmers saying, hey, I could make some alcohol and it'll run, a Model T will run just as well on alcohol as it will on gasoline, which is probably true. It ended up in the 1970s with people then starting into gasohol, which then became, as ethanol, a replacement for a fuel additive, an oxygenator for MTBI, which then became clear that it was a substitute for imported oil. And in 2007, we passed the Renewable Fuel Standard. It's opened the door to prosperity in America's farm belt. And New Holland, Case IH, John Deere, and almost every farm family in the Midwest is in one way or another a beneficiary of this Renewable Fuel Standard. Why is that? Because it mandates that each year there'll be an increasing amount of biofuel mixed in with petroleum in propelling America's transportation industry. And this in turn creates demand for farm products. So when the ethanol movement was young, we were producing 1 billion gallons a year. Price of corn was $3 a bushel. Then we got to a little more investment. People on Wall Street said, my God, these ethanol plants, they can produce this ethanol at 2-something a gallon. The gasoline's $3 a gallon. They can sell this right into the market. Says, look, this is like a self-licking ice cream cone. Farmer joins a plant. You put some Wall Street money in it. Farmer grows the corn. He goes to the ethanol plant with the corn. The plant buys the corn. Plant produces ethanol, sells it, sells the distiller's grain back into the livestock market for food. Everybody wins. So ethanol production went from 1 billion to 2 billion to 3 billion to 7 billion to 8 billion to 10 billion gallons a year in 2008. And we were consuming about 140 billion gallons a year of liquid fuel. And suddenly, big oil woke up. Lights flashed. Bing, 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 bing. Because what happened was, in 2008, people stopped driving when the price of gasoline shot up to $4, over $4 a gallon. And the demand for fuel fell. And the refiners looked around and they said, my God, these ethanol people, they just keep producing more and more ethanol. If we don't do something about it, they're going to drive us out of business. I was on the board of an oil refinery in Coffeyville, Kansas. Some of you know that refinery. They're good people down there. But what the guys at the refinery told me, said, Wes, you're killing us at the rack. Said, we take our stuff to the Kansas City rack. We're selling it at the wholesale market. Said, and there, when we could get the extra 2 or 3 cents a gallon for gasoline, You're there with ethanol and it's cheaper. You're holding down the price of gasoline on us. I said, yeah. I mean, that's the whole idea. And not only that, we're preventing importing gasoline. So the American Petroleum Institute and others got real interested in this, and they realized that if they didn't do something, oil, big oil, was going to be hurt. I was at an energy conference, and I heard the representative from one of these big oil companies say, we got to do something about this renewable fuel. Otherwise, we're going to have to start closing refineries. Yeah, I'm sorry. That's the way the business community works. Progress occurs. Old businesses are phased out. New businesses come in. And what's new in America is agribusiness. You go out on the floor of this convention center and look at what's out there. It is remarkable. Certainly your grandfathers wouldn't have recognized it. Your fathers wouldn't have understood it. And if we'd been here 10 years ago, we'd be, and saw it today, we'd be amazed. I was out looking at one of the companies that I've known from the military, Trimble, doing precision navigation for the military and helping do precision agriculture. It's just remarkable what can be done now with modern technology. And it can be done because the price of corn isn't $2.50 a barrel. A gallon, a bushel. The price of corn has stabilized and been pushed by the ethanol movement into the $4, $5 range. The drought pushed it on higher than that. But what the ethanol plants have done is they provided a counter-cyclical stabilizing force in the corn market. So when the price of corn is low, they buy more corn. When the price of corn is high, they buy less corn. In the ethanol business today in America, we're buying about 40% of the corn crop. We're processing it, taking the starch out, and then we're releasing the residue out to the livestock market as cattle feed and poultry feed. So net-net, we're using about 16% of the corn crop for fuel. And what we're getting from that is 900,000 barrels a day. We're saving between $30 and $40 billion a year in the U.S. economy from having to import oil, and we're keeping that money in the United States. Now, this is the tip of the iceberg, and this is what the fight's about. The Renewable Fuel Standard says that producing 10 billion gallons a year isn't enough. Last year, we produced 13 billion gallons a year. It's not enough. Under the Renewable Fuel Standard, in 9 years, we're expected to produce 36 billion gallons of ethanol, corn-based ethanol, or cellulosic ethanol. That's 9 years. That's $36 billion. We've got big oil's attention. They're on the warpath. Their number one objective this year is to destroy the renewable fuel standard. They've made no bones about it. They're coming at us through the American Petroleum Institute. They're coming at us through the environmental movement. They're coming at us every direction they can come at. But they're coming at from an old industry attacking a new industry. Because I go to these ethanol plants, I look at what they're doing. First of all, they're pretty wonderful modern technology. If you haven't ever been to one, you should. People are in there in lab coats, microscopes, modern measuring equipment, rapid communications. But they're also developing other products from the corn. They're at the center of the future of modern biorefineries going through the United States. All of this starting with the value of the land. This is what is unique about America. We've got the best, most productive land anywhere in the world. Nobody else has it. And nobody has the productivity that the American farm community has. And somehow, As the price of oil went up, men and women in the agricultural sector realized that they could use this land and produce not only food, but fuel. And in doing so, they could help America. They could help America reduce that money flowing out of this country. They could reduce the payouts going to nations that don't support us. They could reduce the money going to terrorists. They could help uncouple the United States energy market from places abroad that require us to send our men and women to fight and die to protect energy sources. We can do it all from right here. I've been working now with the ethanol movement for over 4 years. I've been to a lot of farms, a lot of refineries. I've talked to a lot of people. I think I got a pretty good sense for what's out there. I work in 14 different nations with about 40 businesses, and I can tell you there's nothing anywhere that compares to the energy, the imaginativeness, the creativity, and the sheer resolve and determination of American agriculture. You all are the best in the world. We take food independence for granted. With your effort, we're going to take a major step toward energy independence. But we've got to protect the renewable fuel standard. And as part of doing that, we've got to get E15 into the marketplace. Because if our growers and producers don't have any place to put that ethanol, it's not going to the market. Right now, it's a fight with big oil. They've thrown every roadblock they can imagine at us through the EPA. They've said, you got to do this, you got to do that, you got to make sure they can't get a cup of E15 out because someone may make a mistake with it. E15 has been the most studied, most well-researched, most documented, most argued over fuel in the history of the United States of America. The truth is, it's already been cleared for automobiles since 2001 or newer. Truth is, it's been tested for millions of miles. It will save money, it will improve the environment, and it will put us more firmly on the road to energy independence. So we need it. So ladies and gentlemen, I'm here today first to thank you for what you're doing for America in agriculture. But I'm also here to ask for your help. We've got to have your help in growth energy, in the American farm movement, in American corn, in any number of organizations who have banded together to fight for the renewable fuel standard. It's about national security. It's about your welfare in the American agricultural movement. It's about the future of technology in this country. We've got to have this. We've got to protect it this year in Washington. So we need your help. Come to our website, growthenergy.com. Sign up as a stakeholder. Read about what's going on. Be informed. Talk it up in your local communities. Ask your local businesses to join with us, as New Holland has, and help us support this. We're doing this for all of you. It's one of the most important things we can do for national security. Keep our men and women at home. Take money from terrorists. Let other nations handle their own problems. We've got the most dynamic agricultural sector in the world. All we're asking for is a chance to use it. Just put us in the game and let us win. That's what we're asking Washington. But we got to have all of you help us. So would you help us? Help us preserve and protect this movement in American agriculture. Keep the renewable fuel standard alive. Get E15 to the marketplace. And let's win the battle for America's energy independence. Thank you.